DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Truly hope that you had a very happy Thanksgiving. Got a chance to spend some time with some family and friends, enjoy some good food. I know that I did. I've always loved that day. Love it even more now that I've got young kids to kind of share that time with. And we all got together yesterday and had a really good time and just some excellent food and just a great way to begin what I think is a fun, special time of year. And I do have to say, as a college football fan, I also love the way that, you know, the most crucial portion of the football season bleeds into the holiday time of year with Thanksgiving and Christmas and everything else. I love the fact that as we watch Georgia ramp up here, we also head into the time when you see the Christmas lights and the food on the table and everything else. It's just really, really good and really good stuff. And we're glad you're here. And of course, before we get to playoff implications and Christmas trees and everything else, there's some business to take care of for Georgia and Georgia Tech on Saturday. And I saw one stat this week that obviously is a reference to clean old-fashioned aid among some other games for this particular weekend. And I take comfort in this. Maybe some of you disagree. There's really a couple of different ways to look at this. It's almost like a litmus test for how you view the world, how you view this particular tweet. But it's a tweet that references, frankly, a trend here that Georgia Tech's involved with on Saturday that has all gone, for the most part, one way thus far this season. Let me show it to you on video. If you're listening radio or a podcast, I'll read it to you. The Bear Chris Felica, who I like, who you see on ESPN's College Game Day on a Saturday mornings, tweets this. Let me read this to you. This is pretty interesting. Top five teams this year are 40-1 versus unranked teams this season. Only two other times in the championship game era, that stretches back to the beginning of the BCS in 1998. Only two other times have we had a season where top five teams went through a season with just one loss versus unranked teams, 2015 and 2010. There are four such matchups on Saturday. Now, what the Bear seems to be insinuating here is, oh, top five teams, be careful. It's unusual for this many top five teams to sweep the season against unranked teams. That's unusual. I'm guessing the only top five team to lose to an unranked team was Ohio State against Purdue, right? It had to be the only one. Yeah, Ohio State losing to Purdue was the only time that happens. So Felica, who's kind of a betting-minded guy, would seem to be saying here, y'all be careful, top five teams don't typically do this. They don't typically run through a season like this. Be on the lookout for some potential upsets on Saturday. But I kind of take the exact opposite approach on this. And for at least a moment, I got to talk about something just beyond Georgia versus Georgia Tech. Have y'all noticed, and this is kind of working out to Georgia's benefit, so maybe you don't care, but I think it's true nonetheless. Have y'all noticed that college football, and I say this as a guy who loves the sport, but college football is actually getting a little bit more boring. I saw another stat this week where I think Reese Davis said this on TV the other night. We've only had seven teams ranked in the top six all season long in terms of the playoff top 25. The playoff top 25 that started being released at the beginning of the month, over the course of that time, we've only had seven different teams occupy a spot in the top six. There's almost no movement, almost no, you know, shocking surprises, almost no debate to be had whatsoever. In fact, we've essentially rubber stamped, you know, these teams where they are for the last several weeks here of, hey, we'll try to figure out what's going on with these top six teams. Well, you know, the gap between them and everybody else is very, very, very far. And that's what's really happening here. College football as a sport is becoming a little bit more predictable. College football as a sport is becoming a little bit more drama-free. And I think the only reason to explain why that's true is because when you look at the very top teams on the food chain, they are dominating on signing day to such an overwhelming degree that there's almost no elite talent for anybody else to have whatsoever. The 4- and 5-star players predominantly now are playing in Alabama or Ohio State or Georgia or Clemson or Michigan. And then after that, it's just a chasm in between, you know, Georgia and the other teams that are in that group with Georgia and the next group. So when the Bear Chris Felica says, oh, it's weird, the top five teams have not lost to unranked teams this year because we typically see that in a given season. Well, that may be weird from a historic standpoint, but it's not weird when you look at the overall reason why it's happening, because the unranked teams have never been farther away from the ranked teams when it comes to the overall talent. And we'll see that on Saturday for Georgia and Georgia Tech. And I've been reminded a million times this week, well, BA, don't forget, Georgia lost to Georgia Tech back in 2016. That's true. Georgia's actually lost the last two in Athens, as we pointed out over and over again, in 2014 and 2016. But the world around Dawg Nation has changed mightily since then. And there are guys that are literally struggling to get on the field for Georgia that would probably be, stars, the centerpiece of the program if they were at Georgia Tech. And it's not just true for clean old-fashioned eight. That's also true right now for Clemson, South Carolina. It's even true for Auburn and Alabama. I mean, Auburn, essentially a fixture near the top of, at least in the top 10, top 15 of the recruiting rankings. But look at the gap between Auburn and Alabama right now. We saw it a couple weeks ago, the gap between Auburn and Georgia. If there's that big of a gap between UGA and Auburn, then how much larger is the gap between Georgia and Georgia Tech? Maybe the position group that I think embodies that as well as anything right now, maybe at wide receiver for Georgia. We don't think of Georgia as being a throw-it-around type of team, but when you look at the overall depth of a position group, wide receiver stands out for Georgia right now as much as anything does. At different points in time this year, think about the different guys who seem to be the lead dog there. It was Mecole Hardman earlier in the season. It's been Terry Godwin at times. In the preseason, we all have these, tremendously high expectations for Demetrius Robertson. Then it was J.J. Holloman's turn to have big moments. Last week, we saw Tyler Simmons get involved there. And it's not just what these guys do when they catch the football, but it's also deep downfield blocks that open holes for the running game that allow DeAndre Swift to have great performances. It's all of that. And Kirby Smart actually talked about this this week. So when you think about why teams that like Georgia rank the top five are dominating their unranked opponents like the one that Georgia's going to play on Saturday in the Yellow Jackets, look no further than the wide receiver position for Georgia as an explanation for why. A lot of talented guys have decided to gather in one position group, and they don't seem right now to be all that worried about individual accolades. They seem to be coming together for the good of the team. Here's Kirby Smart on that.
We have good balance in the room, and we have great camaraderie. They all enjoy being around each other. They love seeing each guy get the limelight at different times. I mean, Tyler had some big games early in the year where he made some plays, and he's just now kind of getting back. He had an injury where he was out of whack for a little bit, and he's played well the last two weeks, really, and he's played well in practice. I think each one of those guys has had a game where you'd say, he's the guy. You don't have to have a guy. You can do it by committee, and those guys are talented. Just because you say, well, they don't have a star-studded group, they don't have a star. One of those wideouts could be on somebody else's team and be a star, but we don't sell individual goals. We sell team goals, and we sell winning, and that takes care of itself. A lot of guys, for selfish reasons, want individual accolades, but that's not really how the NFL works. They're not drafting a guy based on the number of receptions he has. They don't do that. I mean, some of the best wideouts in the NFL right now came from SEC teams and didn't have a lot of catches. So we look at it as saying, hey, you're going to develop as a player and a team player, and you're going to grow on special teams, and the next level will take care of itself. Right now, we're trying to win football games.
I don't know that wide receiver is Georgia's deepest position group for Georgia, but the way that Kirby Smart describes, the way they sell the idea of teamwork and togetherness and not individual accolades, I think that's an embodiment of why the top five teams like Georgia and like Alabama and like Clemson are dominating these unranked opponents this season as much as they are, because that used to not be the way it was. People wanted to go be stars, but now I think they have understood that being in an elite program that prepares me for the NFL is going to get me where I want to go, even if I don't collect a lot of stats along the way. And with that being the case, I think that disparity between the elite programs and the less than elite programs is only going to grow. Now, the pushback on a lot of this is, be careful, BA. This is still a rivalry game. Tech still wants to get its, pound of flesh against UGA. And after all, 2016, 2014, blah, 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 blah. Well, Kirby Smart did talk about that. He's got the rivalry mindset here this week as well. But for Georgia, as Kirby explains, they've been in the rivalry mindset for most of the season and virtually every game of every season. Here's more from Kirby on that.
Focus, concentration, effort, toughness, competitive fibers. I mean, Tech's one of our rivals. Who's not? So it's like next up, you look at our schedule, it's like everybody's a big rival. These guys are a big rival, and we've got to do a good job against them because it's a tough matchup. It's a tough game to play, and we got to send our seniors out the right way.
Yeah, so they're looking forward to doing that. The overall bottom line for me is this. Not only do I think that Georgia's going to beat Georgia Tech easily, I think Alabama's probably going to beat Auburn easily. And I think that Clemson's probably going to beat South Carolina easily. And a lot of these top five teams taking on unranked opponents, I think for the most part, they're all going to be easy victory for the teams like Georgia that have collected the elite talent. It wasn't that long ago that Tech beating Georgia in this rivalry was not that big of a shock. It happened a couple of times. But the world has changed a lot since Kirby Smart has gotten his program fully established at UGA, and Tech playing close against Georgia is not the kind of thing I expect to happen anytime soon. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Hello to you, and thank you for being with us. No matter how you get to us today on this day after Thanksgiving, if you're taking some time off today, hope you're enjoying yourself and getting a chance to spend some time with your family and friends. Live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter feed, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form. Wherever podcasts can be found, including the world-famous DogNation.com or the Apple Podcast Player, we are just really glad to have you with us, and hopefully we'll have a good time with you on the show here today. We'll have Jeff Sintel coming up in just a couple of minutes. We'll talk about some recruiting stuff with Jeff. Huge list of visitors, at least and a couple of key names for this upcoming Saturday. Jeff will give us a preview on that. Before any of that, though, let me also say a huge thank you to Marco's Pizza for making the show possible. And, of course, I know many of you probably leftovered out by the time Friday night rolls around or Saturday afternoon rolls around. That's why you want to think about Marco's Pizza and a real game changer for dinner here. With two medium, two-topping pizzas from Marco's at a great everyday value of just $6.99 each. You can order one today at marcos.com. So you're done with the leftover turkey. You're done with the leftover food from Thanksgiving. Let Marco's Pizza do dinner for you and get that great offer, two medium, two-topping pizzas for $6.99 each. That'll be a lot of fun. All right, before we get Jeff Sintel, let me also set the stage for some of what's going to happen on Saturday, at least from the expected visitor route. If you were with us on Tuesday for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all, you'll remember that as we were speaking on the air live, Jeff Sintel was able to confirm that, yes, the four-star running back Noah Cain is going to be in the building tomorrow, and I think that's exciting for Georgia in its pursuit of that elite running back here for the class of 2019. Cain's a guy that has been on the radar for a lot of Georgia fans for quite some time, and tomorrow Georgia gets its chance to impress. Georgia's also got some real competitors here. Recent visit to Penn State for Cain seemed to go really well. He's tweeted about that. As of late, we also showed you some of the quotes from Cain coming from his Texas official visit not too long ago. That's obviously fresh on his mind here, too. So if Georgia wants Cain, it's going to have to really work to impress here this particular weekend, just given the fact that some of the other visits that Cain's been on as of late have gone really well, especially the one there, Texas. That's a state that he has ties to. That's where he lived before he transferred to play his high school football at IMG Academy. So we'll talk to Jeff about Noah Cain. But the other name we got to really talk about here for a moment is Jaden Hazelwood, who, as Jeff points out, is also taking his visit to UGA this weekend. And for Hazelwood, you know, this is a guy that has taken a lot of high profile visits, whether it was Oklahoma back during the spring, Auburn, Miami, Florida State this past weekend. You know, and Hazelwood, when he joined us at Marlowe's Tavern about a year or so ago, I mean, he explained this process. At the time, he was a UGA commit, so there were a lot of Georgia fans who were nervous about the fact that Hazelwood was going and looking at all these other schools and allowing them to entertain him and try to make their pitch to him. But as Hazelwood explained, I'll give him credit for this, he never wavered in this, that he was unapologetic about wanting to go out and follow this process as far as it could go and do his due diligence. Here's what he told us at Marlowe's Tavern about his own visits about a year or so ago.
I'm in the process of scheduling my officials right now. Like, I'm taking my first one in April to Oklahoma, of course. I mean, but that doesn't change my opinion on Georgia. Like, I see fans commenting, like, someone told me respect the fans and we'll respect you or something like that. And I just looked at it and was like, man, y'all don't understand. You only can do it one time.
So you can only do it one time, and he certainly enjoyed taking his visits. And I think what that sets the stage for is a chance for Georgia now entertaining an uncommitted prospect to really work hard to impress him and really work hard to show him the good time that some of these other schools have done. And I would expect that Georgia does put its best foot forward there. One of the ways in which Georgia may also do that is the offense that it puts on display against Georgia Tech. Dogs have had success throwing the football a bit lately, and Tech is the kind of defense in which you can get rich passing on. Now, with Hazelwood there watching in the building, is that the kind of thing that Georgia might do? Well, recently Jeff Sintel had a chance to ask Jaden Hazelwood, have you noticed that the Dogs have been throwing around a bunch more, getting the wide receivers much more involved? At the time, he hadn't, but I'm guessing he'll get a chance to see that up and close and personal tomorrow. Here's what Hazelwood said about that recently.
Since you decommitted, it looks like the program you were committed to is throwing the ball. Have you noticed that? What are your thoughts on it?
I haven't been watching UGA, but fans have been tweeting at me.
They've been telling you.
So I heard they've been throwing the ball more.
So he's heard that, and tomorrow he'll get a chance to see that with his own eyes. And my guess is, whether it's intentional to impress Hazelwood or not, my guess is that Dog fans will see the ball in the air, and Hazelwood will get a chance to see how he would fit into that offense moving forward for 2019, which should be fun for everybody involved. Here on Dog Nation Daily, let's also take some time to look ahead to tomorrow and our Kroger checklist, a busy Saturday between the hedges tomorrow. It starts for us around 9:30 in the morning. Well, that's our approximate time. We'll do our Kroger kickoff. Could be a little bit of rain there tomorrow, but we'll bring you coverage of the dog walk and the pregame activities tomorrow for our Kroger kickoff starting about 9:30 a.m. Game between the Dogs and the Jackets at noon, also on the radio on AM News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. And then our Northside Hospital postgame show immediately after the game live from the UGA bookstore. We're looking forward to being with you for all of that, and really excited about the regular season finale for the Georgia Bulldogs tomorrow. By the way, speaking of the Kroger checklist, Kroger's got a great offer for you right now. You can get four times the fuel points on gift cards with digital coupons at Kroger.com. It's the offer valid from November 18th through December 11th. So make sure you would check that out. Those Kroger gift cards, a great gift this time of year. And with four times the fuel points, that makes it even better. It's good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We will hear more from Kirby Smart a little later on the program. For now, though, let's talk to our buddy Jeff Sintel.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And a very happy Thanksgiving to our buddy Jeff Sintel. Jeff, hope you had a great time and enjoyed yourself and got a chance to gorge yourself on some good food and spend some time with some family and friends. And I no doubt trust that you did.
Hey, man. Good morning, everybody. It's funny. My wife reminded me of something she just saw on TV. And you had a cup of mashed potatoes. It takes you 5 miles on the bike to work those off. If you had a half a cup of gravy on top of that, it takes another 5 miles on the block on the bike to work them off. So I asked my dear bride, I said, how many holes of golf does that take? So I'm still waiting on that.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I've always felt like that's like the most unfair part of the whole food game here is like, you know, people talk about eating right and exercising, but boy, it takes a lot of exercise to combat the food. Because I know for me, it's a lot of dressing yesterday, a lot of mashed potatoes, a lot of macaroni and cheese and corn. You know, it's all like the starchy side dishes. Not a lot of green for me on the plate yesterday, which probably speaks pretty poorly of my ability to recover from all that, Mr. Sintel.
Well, hey, Brandon, you gotta suck it up, man. You got a big game on Saturday. I think your listeners would be curious to know that there is a junior defensive tackle, number 90, from the hills of Tennessee, named Brandon Adams, that plays for the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. So there will be a Brandon Adams trying to harass Jake Fromm on Saturday for those Yellow Jackets.
Normally, Brandon Adams just trying to harass you, so I guess maybe that's a step up in competition here. Speaking of everything else that's going to be going on Saturday, as you reminded us when you were with us on Tuesday, Jaden Hazelwood expected to be in the building for a pretty high-profile visit. I kind of suggested before you joined us, Jeff, that maybe the Dogs against what can be kind of a suspect Tech pass defense might look to put the ball in the air a little bit more on Saturday, maybe give Hazelwood a chance to kind of imagine how he might fit into that offense going forward. For a guy that's been to Georgia a lot, seeing how the offense works right now is probably more important than seeing the campus. I'm assuming that Hazelwood's seen that a good bit. Do you think that Georgia might truly give Hazelwood a little bit of a preview of what a pass-happy version of a Georgia offense might look like?
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people take a lot of the comments Jaden has made, maybe goes 10 miles on the bike with him. But it was really, if he had to articulate it, it's really hard, but it really sounds like maybe – you know, one or two more deep shots per game is what he'd love to see. And I think this is an important official visit because it's maybe a reassuring visit that Georgia has most of the things, most all of the things, if not all of the things, he's looking for at the next level. And you were talking about pass attempts and putting the ball in the air. Well, I know that Georgia throws the ball less than 10 times. That's probably not going to be an encouraging sign, but needless to say, Georgia will do whatever it needs to in order to win. But, you know, last few weeks, Brandon, we've tried to put a little dollop or a little sprinkling of recruiting spice on this whole matchup. And the last few weeks, you know, Auburn and Georgia, I call it the elite player ratio, the 4- and 5-star players each school had signed. You know, with Georgia and Kentucky, it was 67-15. With Georgia and Auburn, it was 67-57. With Georgia and UMass, of course, it was 67-0. Now this week with Georgia Tech, it is 67-3.
Yeah.
Going back to 2015, the Yellow Jackets have signed 3 players that have either a 4-star and a 5-star rating. And with the, as what when Larry Munson used to say, the trade school from North Avenue, they have signed all 4 stars to get to that three number right there. They have not signed a 5-star prospect in the last 2015, 16, 17, the last 4 recruiting cycles under Paul Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk to you more about that in our conversation here coming up, because, I mean, what you just laid out, part of the reason why I think Georgia wins this game by at least 30 tomorrow. I don't think this is a close game at all, and that's one of the reasons why I think, you know, how Georgia goes about its business here, you know, given the fact that I believe it could choose to do whatever it wanted, is going to be interesting, especially with Hazelwood in the building. And you said, I love the way that you described, you know, his particular view with the Georgia offense is it doesn't have to become an air raid, but just 2 or 3 more deep shots per game. And Jeff, regardless of if Hazelwood's in the mix or not, I do think that's the next evolution of this Georgia offense. We know that it can pound the running game. It's proven that over the last couple of weeks. We know that, you know, it's also added some extra dimension with the throwing game here as well post LSU, but to really be at its full strength, I do think that lethal deep threat on top of that has got to be the way this thing grows next. It's the play action off of the running game, which has been so dominant in the NFL for such a long time. Whether Hazelwood comes to Georgia or not, those couple extra deep throws per game, I do think that's the next development for this Georgia offense. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would say so, especially that, you know, it's really funny, Brandon, because let's face it, Georgia has reached a point where, I mean, it was that way under Mark Richt. If we want to be totally objective and honest, even Mark Richt's teams played about 5 real opponents every year that could beat the Bulldogs. And Georgia usually went 3-2 in those years, and when they were great, they went 4-1 in those years. When they were not so great, they went 2-3 or worse in those years. Now, with the way the staff recruits players and also squeezes every dollop of ability out of them by working them so hard on the practice field, I think it comes down to maybe 1 or 2 or 3 games now. And Georgia Tech definitely isn't one of those. But for those 1 or 2 or 3 games, and hello Alabama in the SEC title game, hello LSU in Death Valley, and maybe, you know, maybe even Florida when they get really good. But right now that third team is Auburn. That's a roster that can roll up their sleeves and go toe-to-toe with the Bulldogs. But for them to get against that elite competition, those teams that they will play in the month of December, and that's what it is all about now. Georgia builds to win games in December because that means bigger things for their season. And to win those against those elite teams, those Clemsons, those Ohio States, that's the next step of the offense. And the next, Georgia just simply doesn't have to go very deeply into its playbook reservoir to beat a lot of those teams because they have a decided advantage on the field and talent.
Let's talk about Noah Cain for a minute, Jeff. What do you expect in terms of the way things go between Cain and Georgia tomorrow? Cain's obviously got a lot of potential suitors out there. We've talked about Texas. I guess we've even talked a little bit about Penn State, who he's tweeted about a little bit here as of late. Georgia's also got a running back already in the mix for 2019, and I guess it remains to be seen if it's in the mix for any of these other backs here. What do you think about the Georgia-Cain relationship heading into his official visit this weekend?
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to the family has told me that they had a lot of good vibes in June, the last time they were all there with Georgia. A lot of good vibes with Georgia, and they were feeling good about things. And then Georgia took an elite running back commitment in John Emery, and that kind of basically just caused Noah Cain to look elsewhere because he knows another elite back being added to Georgia's depth chart would probably mean he should probably look elsewhere. Well, the subtraction of John Emery, I think what the family's looking to see there is they're looking to see they're going to all get some time on this official visit, probably going to take place on Sunday or maybe Saturday late afternoon. And what's going to happen is I'm going to get around the table, and it's going to be Kirby Smart, Del McGee, and then it's going to be Jim Chaney. And they're just going to talk about how they value Noah Kane in the offense. So they see him as a guy that they'd love to add to the class and love to feature them in the back, feature him in the backfield during his time in Athens. If there's just that good vibes where everybody's like, Noah, we really want you as a part of this class, and Noah feels that, his family feels that. I think the one member of the Kane family that's not really over the moon yet about Georgia, and I think that's because she hasn't been informed well enough, would be Noah Kane's mother. I think Noah Kane and his father both feel that Georgia's a great place for a back to be showcased. They know how many are starting in the NFL, and they know about the quality of offensive linemen that would be in front of them as well. And that's why they always say Georgia would be a great business decision for a final process for Noah Kane that's going to come down to which school can utilize his services and feature him and put him in a place where three or four years, down the line, then professional football would be a viable opportunity for him as well. I think they're just looking for the best possible situation there. And if those good vibes ensue, I think Georgia would be a great situation for Noah Kane.
So to bottom line this a little bit, is this still a situation where both sides are feeling the other out? Is Georgia still trying to decide if you know, Kane fits into its plans? Is Kane still trying to decide if Georgia fits into his plans? Or is there a chance that these two entities, either the team or the player, decide they want to do more than date and actually get married? I mean, like how I guess down and dirty are the conversations between these two entities going to be tomorrow? Is this still a feeling out process, or is it deeper into it than that?
Well, if you want to get deep into the weeds, I would wonder about how Georgia looks at its board with its commitments or its thoughts that they're in a good spot with other players on the board, and then they would have to look and see, do we need an extra running back? Does the program have the ability to take an extra running back in this class, knowing who would be returning and who might not be returning? And also what other spots they need to fill with the last few members of the class of 2019. I think it's going to simply come down to does the Kane family feel that Georgia is as good a spot as any for him to have a productive college career? And I think they're going to compare that with the other schools they've been to. I think Texas is huge in his recruiting, and I think Penn State is also huge in his recruiting. I don't think Auburn is there as much. I don't even think he's not taking the trip to Ohio State, but I just can't see him joining a backfield at LSU with Ty Davis and John Emery Jr. already there in the 2019 class. So really, he just wants to, I think this family just wants to leave Athens feeling, we know we can succeed there, we know we're wanted there, and that opportunity now, with all those things hashed out face-to-face, is as good as any out there for Noah Kane. I think that's something that might have to happen in the middle of that moment, in the middle of this weekend.
Let me read you a tweet here from our buddy Nolan Smith, the five-star defensive end and UGA commit. He says, my second official visit with my family this weekend. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. He's obviously going to be at Alabama. The three words that get my attention, Jeff, there are with my family. Should Georgia fans be concerned that Smith is taking his family with him to Alabama? Obviously, those are the kinds of visits that typically mean a little bit more than the ones that don't include family. We've talked about that a million times before about other prospects. Is there anything for UGA fans to be worried about with Smith in Tuscaloosa this weekend?
It's funny, Brandon. With what Nolan puts out on Twitter, sometimes I have to I gloss over it so much now that I have to go back and make sure I saw certain tweets and everything else like that. I think the second official visit with his family this weekend is, if you saw the tweet, I'm sure this is the one you're referring to, he's talking about Evan Neal and Trey Sanders. Those are two of his teammates at IMG.
Pardon me. Thank you for correcting that. Thank you.
But I think it's a double meaning, though, because his family will likely be with him on the official visit as well. But those are two IMG guys. They've played together forever. They've been there forever. Trey Sanders and Alabama seem like they're walking down the aisle, to use your courtship metaphor, with a second date, third date, engaged, and that sort of thing. And I think Evan Neal is feeling very strongly about the Tide as well. Remember, Evan was originally committed to Alabama earlier in his process before he decommitted. And then those three guys, they've all played together for years at IMG Academy. And I think that's what he's specifically talking about in terms of his official visit there.
Thanks for correcting me on that, Jeff. I do appreciate that, because I did misread that. But overall, is this the kind of thing you think that that Georgia fans should have any reason to worry about?
Well, there's always reason to worry. I mean, I would say Nolan is in that 99.1% percentile there. I would say as long as we keep going on until he signs on December the 19th, that I would be stunned if Nolan Smith does not end up in the Georgia class. That's how strongly he works for the program behind the scenes, behind what you see on Twitter. But, you know, Nolan is a young man full of energy, full of charisma. He was the one that, you know, made some people grab those Fred G. Sanford heart palpitation moments around April Fool's Day earlier this year. But I would say this, that if any, there's only a couple players in the class. I think Brandon and I were kicking around an idea for Before the Hedges a while back where if we had to rate the most committed players in the class, I would still put Nolan Smith in my top five. Despite what he does on Twitter.
All right, a couple quick things before we let you go. First of all, before we're done, I want to preview what's going to be a huge week for Dog Nation next week on the road to Atlanta. Let me, though, Jeff, kind of finish off a conversation that you kind of started a little earlier. You're talking about the disparity between Georgia and Georgia Tech in terms of the total number of 4 and 5 stars the two program has signed. I believe that's an incredibly predictive stat, and it actually connects well to what I was saying off the top of the program, that the Bear Chris Felica from ESPN points out that only one unranked team has beaten a top five team all season long. What I said, Jeff, is, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, that in the future we can expect more of that because I believe that the disparity in terms of talent advantage for the elite teams, the top five ranked teams, is only growing now and in the future. As another case in point here, we've only had 7 teams ranked in the top 6 at any point in time this month that the selection committee has been releasing its top 25. The usual suspects are just not changing. Now, Ohio State's not as good as they probably should be, but it's essentially Ohio State, Michigan, Clemson, Alabama, Georgia. I mean, and that's really kind of about it in terms of the overall collection of elite players in the country right now, which I do think has ramifications on how likely anyone should feel an upset of Georgia Tech over Georgia is. I mean, it seems like you and I are kind of on the same page on this.
Yeah, that's what happens. I mean, it's funny, Brandon. When all the recruiting industry is there at the opening every year, and it's been that way for the past 2 years. I just always think of we look around, and sometimes you know it's the writers that cover Alabama, the writers that cover Ohio State, the writers that cover Clemson, and you just sit there and you go, it's whether you see them on the way in the parking lot, and they're like, how many commitments you have here? How many do you think you'll get? And it usually ends up totaling about 60 to 65 of the 160 so players there. So that's 3 or 4 programs that take up, you know, almost 50% of the field at the opening every year. And the other 117 or 114 Division I programs have to scratch and claw for those remaining 100 players. And it's kind of just seemed an inevitability to me, given the way that the staff at Alabama, the staff at Ohio State, and the staff at Clemson operates. In Michigan to a lesser extent, but it just seems like those schools are going to be in a round robin every year for the national title. There was such as a thing as a prop bet where you could say, give me the next 5 national champions, and you can put Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and Clemson into that ratio. I would feel pretty good about that prop bet's chances for the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, that group would really be about -950, I think, to win the thing if you really put the real odds out there. All right. All right, big week for us next week. You got Marlowe's on Thursday for our Road to Atlanta live at Marlowe's at 6 p.m. Jeff, I know you're excited about being a part of that. It's going to be the Marlowe's at Brookhaven. Our buddy John Stinchcomb going to also be on hand there as well. One of the things that's going to be fun to talk to John about, Jeff, is the fact that he was on that first ever Georgia team to win the SEC championship. So when we think about how far the program has come since then, reminiscing about that with John next week is going to be great. It's the Marlowe's in Brookhaven, 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta, 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta, the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. It's 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursday for our Road to Atlanta live at the Marlowe's Tavern. Jeff, first of all, how much fun is that going to be next week?
Yeah, it will be. And, I mean, it'll be the epicenter of Georgia football next week where the rematch will happen there with Alabama. And I know lots of people got to see Creed 2 already this week, that rematch between Drago and Creed.
Sure.
Tons. But I would say that you know, that's really the game everybody's all been waiting for. Pardon me for you know, looking past Georgia Tech a little bit, but if we're previewing next week, I mean, that really has been the collision course for both programs, the way they recruit, the way these staffs are assembled with quality coaches. It's just I just kind of see this happening in the annual affair. Like when we were talking about rivals the other day, I know the Bulldogs, you made a very fair point that the Bulldogs have to beat Alabama for it to be considered a rivalry, but I see this dance card happening annually in December for the next two or three years at least, given the way that both teams have assembled talent and the way they take care of business on the field with very much similar offenses. I know lots of people point out Tua and how Alabama's winging the ball around with lots of five-star receivers, but when it cuts down to the nuts and bolts of these games, Georgia's what they do running the football and what Georgia does throwing the football on the national ranking stage, at least, looks kind of similar to what Alabama does as the number one team from wire to wire so far this year.
And then let me also put one more thing on everybody's radar. If you're going to be, speaking of the game next Saturday, if you're going to be there, we want you at the Blue Light starting at 11 a.m. for our Road to Atlanta tailgate. A huge event taking place with our Road to Atlanta tailgate starting at 11 a.m. there that day in the Blue Light. Big time thanks to everybody who's making that possible. Our friends at Pella Window and Door, Cadillac, Marlowe's Tavern, Kroger, Dixie Vodka, all the folks making that Road to Atlanta tailgate in the Blue Lot starting 11 a.m. next Saturday possible. Jeff, that's also going to be – it's probably one of the most fun things we did a year ago on the day of the game, and to get a chance to come back and do that all over again at the Blue Lot next Saturday, that's also going to be a lot of fun too.
Yeah, that was a really great year. All through 2017, it seemed like the weekends just kind of topped one another and got more thrilling for not just the guys like you and I that, you know, cover this program every day and every week and every weekend, but a lot of the fans, it seemed like a lot of those fans were on one of those magic carpet ride type seasons. And for Georgia to have a December to remember, that will be another big, huge game. And it's funny, the way the recruiting is shaping up, you know, Georgia's got a lot of the suspense is kind of going to be taken out of the class the rest of the way. You have determined dates now. Clay Webb told me December 10th is when he will make his decision from a ceremony to school. December 14th is the date for Trevor Keegan to make his decision. And then December 19th is the early signing date where lots of those guys that are strongly committed will put pen to paper and etch their names into the Georgia class. And then two other early enrollee targets, Jaden Hazelwood and Tyreek Stevenson, will both let their decisions out for the world on January the 5th. So there's a lot of set concrete dates where you can call them milestones or guideposts where a lot of Georgia fans that follow recruiting, they kind of have all their dates lined up to where those are the days where the news will happen or the news will not happen for the Bulldogs in the class of 2019.
All right, Jeff, happy Thanksgiving to you. Thanks for being with us. We'll look forward to seeing you in Athens tomorrow. We appreciate your time here today on a Dog Nation Daily. Also looking forward to traveling down the road to Atlanta with you next week. We'll catch up again soon.
All right, guys, I hope everybody dodges the raindrops in Clark County tomorrow.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, Jeff kind of touches on that at the end there. We are expecting rain in the morning. Now, it's not rain during the game, though, right? It's like a rain in the morning thing. So your tailgate may be screwed up, which with the noon start, it's kind of already screwed up as it is. But it sounds like, you know, it's not going to be an issue so much during the game, but some issues there in the morning, so that'll be worth paying attention to. The other thing that, you know, Jeff and I kind of get into there at the end, I'm so excited about the road to Atlanta. Before we kind of move on to our SEC through, I'm so excited about what we're doing next week. Road to Atlanta live at Marlowe's Tavern in Brookhaven on Thursday. The Road to Atlanta tailgate at the Blue Lot on Saturday. But also next week, every day of the week, we're going to have a very special Road to Atlanta preview broadcast. And that's going to be a lot of fun. If you saw the one we did on Tuesday, it was kind of a precursor to what we're doing every day next week. We're kind of looking on both these teams as we head towards that championship game. It's all driven by Cadillac and the brand new XT4. It's Road to Atlanta driven by Cadillac. Next week, extra show, our buddy Mike Johnson, for those of you who are big fans of Mike the way that I am, Mike's going to be a part of that, kind of giving us the enemy intel on the other side, coming from Tuscaloosa. So it's going to be a huge week for us. Road to Atlanta live at Marlowe's on Thursday. Road to Atlanta tailgate at the Blue Lot on Saturday. And Road to Atlanta driven by Cadillac. Special broadcasts each day next week as we bring you coverage from Athens, from Tuscaloosa, and everything heading towards Atlanta on Saturday. That's going to be a lot of fun. All right, let's transition. Let's do our SEC through. And before we do, let me also talk to you a little bit about my friends at MyBookie. I know yesterday you took advantage maybe of that Turkey Day free play that MyBookie had, and today's a great day. You know, for a lot of you, you're just kind of tired, right? You know, what is it? What do they call it? the tryptophan, is that how you say that? The thing that sets in after you eat a big Thanksgiving a lunch or dinner yesterday. So you're sitting around the couch and, you know, maybe you don't feel like moving. A lot of football on TV today. We'll preview some of that in a moment. The best way to feel good about that is to get some action down on the game. Use my friends at MyBookie. They're the only sports book we'd recommend here at Dog Nation because they pay. They pay when you win. They're the home of the fast, no hassle payout when you win. So take advantage of that right now. Also, MyBookie has got a great offer right now. Your first spots can be matched up to 50%. But you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION, all one word, spelled the way it's supposed to be, D-A-W-G. Check out MyBookie online. Use the promo code DOGNATION. Your first deposit can be matched up to 50%, but you got to go right now. All right, so before we get into the football for today, let me look back at last night just for a moment. And I think this is hilarious. More trouble for Ole Miss and Mississippi State. And I watched a lot of this game because I do like the Egg Bowl. I have to admit, this is not the kind of thing that a dignified professional broadcaster supposed to say, but the fact that these two schools hate each other so bad, and the fact that the, you know, the administrators and the coaches are such a big part of that, I've always found that to be really entertaining. I just think that's really funny. And, you know, so I'm always tuning in for just the sideshow of the hatred. I actually turned the game off, though, before the big brawl happens. At the end of the third quarter, they do just get in a knockdown drag out. A.J. Brown's initially involved. Brown, you'll remember, was a wide receiver that chose Ole Miss out of Starkville. So that kind of puts him in the center of the rivalry. Matt Corral, who I don't even know if Jordan Tamo was hurt or why Corral was playing so much last night. But Corral, you know, is involved. He's tugging on somebody's face mask. And then you've got, after the game, the Mississippi State coach, Joe Moorhead, taking a shot at one of the Ole Miss athletic directors for what he did, some of the things that he said. You've got the Mississippi State band playing the Baby Shark song from the kids' TV show as a way of mocking the Land Sharks. Just a messy, messy situation. Another brawl between these two. I actually agree, though, with what Neil McCready from Rebel Grove, which is, I believe, the rival site for Ole Miss, what he tweeted about the game, though, that in a lot of ways, it's the governing bodies, NCAA, SEC, who've kind of made this rivalry what it is, because they gave the Mississippi State linebacker Leo Lewis immunity to talk about what Ole Miss had done for him. But Lewis had also alleged that Mississippi State had also offered him money. So that there's an extent to which that it's the actual administrative conditions that have created this rivalry into what it is. It's still entertaining for me, even though if it's probably not supposed to be. I do take some perverse joy in watching the way these two sides hate each other. There's SEC football today as well. It's Arkansas and Missouri. I told you on Wednesday, Missouri's a huge favorite here, and I just don't see quite how they're going to cover this thing for a second week in a row after getting another blowout against Tennessee the week before. I'd be real careful about that. I don't know if Arkansas is good enough to keep it close, but certainly there's a chance they might be able to. I'd pay close attention to that. We've also got three top 10 teams in action today. UCF is on the road at South Florida. That was a crazy game a year ago. These two teams getting back after today should be kind of interesting, maybe. Oklahoma's at West Virginia. You'll remember that West Virginia lost last week to Oklahoma State, so that takes a little bit of the pizzazz off this game. But Oklahoma, who has played more close games than I think Sooners fans would like, and of course they've struggled defensively in a lot of those games, that could be worth paying attention to. I've also got my eye tonight on Washington State. The Huskies on the road at Wazoo. That's a typical tough place to play, but I think we're thinking the underdog here's got a real chance, right? Yeah, Washington, I think, has a chance to make that one at least closer than the experts think, if not pull the upset against Washington State. And it'll be interesting to see how the dominoes start falling if Washington State indeed does lose. And then tomorrow, it's the biggest game of the day is obviously Michigan-Ohio State, even bigger than the Iron Bowl, given the fact that Auburn's kind of falling apart here. And I talked about this on our Road to Atlanta Driven by Cadillac show earlier in the week. Have you seen some of the chatter coming out of Columbus that somehow there's a pocket of Buckeyes fans apparently that don't want to see Ohio State in the playoff? They want to beat Michigan. They want to win the Big Ten, but then they want to go to the Rose Bowl because they are afraid that they don't think they're capable of beating Alabama. I saw Land Grant Holy Land, which is the SB Nation Ohio State site kind of had a column that suggested that. I find that to be bizarre, but it's just the nature of where we are right now in college football, where even elite teams or so-called elite teams like Ohio State don't even think they have a chance to get it done. It's a strange time for college football, but that is the premier game of the day tomorrow, and so we'll pay close attention to that and make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, I want to get back to Georgia Tech in a moment, let you hear some more from Kirby Smart here in a moment as well, with some great things to say about the seniors who'll play their final game for Georgia tomorrow. But before we get to that, though, let me also take a moment to celebrate what Georgia's doing around the world, beyond just the football field, but also academically and as an impact that the institution's able to make. Huge thank you going out to the more than 145,000 donors who've contributed to the Commit to Georgia campaign. Georgia's endlessly grateful to be supported by so many passionate, cause-driven alumni and friends who commit each and every day to improving our state, our nation, and our world. We're also indebted to those who recognize the importance of public higher education and the impact it can have on communities around the globe. Our donors are helping talented students push boundaries, take risks, and follow their passions. They're also funding critical research that will help improve the lives and create leaders tomorrow, and their generosity truly knows no bounds. So to all of you who have made this possible, it's a simple thank you to all of you. Without your generosity, the University of Georgia would not be what it is today. And if you want to go see more about just exactly what has happened this year, check out this website, give.uga.edu. /recognition. It's give.uga.edu/recognition. And a huge thanks to everyone who's made all of that possible. Speaking of thank yous, Kirby Smart was also tossing some of those out this week, looking ahead to some seniors who'll get ready to play their final football, in at least in terms of Sanford Stadium, in Athens on Saturday. Kirby Smart knows that this group, one of the most successful group of seniors to ever come through the program, has been a big part of the growth of the program seen over the last couple of years. I thought Kirby Smart's words were a great way to kind of put a punctuation mark on what has been not just a great career, but great seasons for many of these guys as well.
I'm excited for the senior class. I mean, I think you always remember your last game in Sanford Stadium. I certainly remember mine. Special opportunity for these guys to thank their families, and for our fans to thank the senior class that has really been a special one. They got a chance to finish in the top probably five or six in the history of Georgia senior classes in terms of wins. And that's a pretty remarkable stat when you think about the senior classes that have been through here. They've done a great job for our program, and certainly me personally and our staff personally, this is kind of the group that we came in with, this freshmen, rising sophomores, proud of what they've been able to accomplish.
I'm hesitant to mention names because I'm afraid that as I go through here, I'll never mention them all, but there's so many of these guys that have, as a fan, meant so much to me personally. The way that Lamont Gilliard's become one of the real anchors and the leaders of this Georgia offensive line. Terry Goblin, whose, I think, career speaks to resiliency and commitment. You know, he's grown as a player over the course of his time at Georgia, working with Kirby Smart. The touchdown he had against Notre Dame, the one-handed grab, will be remembered forever. DeAndre Baker is also, you know, just one of the great players that Georgia's had come through the program in a long time. He has been a lockdown cornerback. DeAndre Walker's been an important part of this defense this year after having to really wait and bide his time there for a while. Jonathan Ledbetter speaks to the value of giving someone a second chance and what can be done when you give someone that second chance. This is a special group of seniors, not just because they've contributed to a lot of UGA wins, but I think over the course of their time at Georgia, they set themselves up for wins away from this program, both as football players, maybe in the NFL, and then in life beyond that as well. So huge thanks to all of them for the enjoyment they've given to all of us, and look forward to seeing them go out in a big way against Georgia Tech tomorrow. All right. By the way, speaking of seniors, check out Connor Riley's Good Day UGA this morning today. Also kind of focus in on some of the seniors that he think could make the big impact against Tech tomorrow. That's a good piece at dognation.com and certainly worth your time to read. The other thing I'll say about what we just heard from Kirby Smart is, you know, when Kirby was first hired, I erroneously didn't know that he was going to be as good as he's turned out to be. And one of the things I kind of downplayed was the value of having an alumnus as the head coach, that in and of itself was not going to be proof of any kind of success. And that's still true. Being an alumnus of Georgia doesn't make Kirby Smart a better coach. But for many of us, it makes it more fun to watch the success he's having, knowing it means something to him special. When he's able to remark about his own last game at Georgia, that's pretty cool. Something else that's pretty cool, it's now been 755 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten Georgia. It's our Gator Hitter Updater. We'll see you Monday right here on Dog Nation Daily.